We want to find out about these tectonic plates and how the world moves around and how the world worked so many millions of years ago. Joining us on the phone right now is Christopher Scotese. He is a geologist and paleographer whose work has been part of this effort that we're talking about. Hey, Chris, how are you this morning?
I'm pretty good.
Thanks so much for jumping on the phone with us. So you're a geologist and paleographer, and
actually it's paleogeographer, like geography.
Paleogeographer. I apologize for that. You can tell that my science is not as good as it should be, Chris.
But yeah, it's often misspelled too, so it's a common mistake.
Oh, good. Well, thank you for making me feel better about it. Tell me about this interactive map, and you know the map that you have created and the geological models you've created that can help us figure out. And it's pretty cool because I think if we all know or learned at some point that the world and where our continents are is not how it always was. So tell me about how we can plug in and say, oh, well, here's where I was born or here's where I live now. And here's what the world looked like millions of years ago and where I would have been.
Sure. Yeah. No, I think everyone, is aware of earthquakes, volcanoes, tells us the Earth is very active, and part of that activity is that we're in constant motion. And so paleogeography is basically an attempt to map the way the positions of the continents back through time. And it's basically a branch of geology. I'm more of an Earth historian than a Earth scientist, and so what I spend my life doing is making maps representing the way the Earth looked back in the past. Unfortunately, it stimulates a lot of interest. A fellow named Ian Webster, who's a really ace programmer and had worked for Google for a while, was able to take the materials that I've been generating over the past several decades and put them into a very unique format where you can view the modern Earth, and then you can also go back through time, which is something I do in animations. But what he added to it, which was really special, was the ability to plot any locality, any modern locality, on these ancient globes. So that way people can make the experience a lot more personal, because you really want to know where you grew up. Where was that 200 million years ago? Or when the dinosaurs were roaming around, was it on top of a mountain or at the bottom of a large sea? This sort of thing stimulates a lot of imagination, and people begin to, it helps people visualize what's happened in their area through time.
Can you explain a little bit, and I know this is going to be over my head quite a bit, but can you explain a little bit of how you are able to determine these things? What is the science behind figuring out how the plates shifted and where they were that long ago?
Yeah, at one level, it's fairly straightforward. We spend, obviously, a whole semester-long course when I was teaching on Earth history. But there's basically three important lines of evidence. One is plate tectonics, and plate tectonics, as everyone pretty much knows now, is the fact that the Earth's outer layer, the outer sort of crust, is broken up into big chunks that are moving. And they move apart at mid-ocean ridges, like the Mid-Atlantic Ridge, where Iceland is sitting right on top of a major, what's called a spreading center. There's a lot of volcanic activity there. Now, if you open an ocean, you have to close an ocean somewhere else. And that's done by a process called subduction, which literally means to lead down. So this lithosphere, this crust, which is created at the ridges, moves across the surface of the Earth and then is pulled back down into the Earth at the great ocean trenches. The Pacific there's a ring of trenches around the Pacific. These generate earthquakes, they generate volcanoes, but they're the sites of where the ocean floor is returning to the Earth. So we know the plates are moving, and we can easily tell where they've been going for the last, say, 50 million years just by sort of backtracking. Once you get further back in time, you have to use other lines of evidence. This is where it gets a little bit complicated, but most people are aware that the Earth has a magnetic field. And what's really interesting about the Earth's magnetic field is that changes polarity. So right now the compass is pointing north. 50,000 years ago, the compasses would have been pointing south. So the Earth's magnetic field flips, and this magnetic change is recorded in the lavas in the ocean floor as they cool, sort of like a tape recorder. And that gives us sort of a very accurate information about the timing of how fast the plates are moving. So that's a very important line of evidence.
Let me ask you about that, because we talked about that on the show about a year or so ago, about the idea some people think that the magnetic field is flipping again. Is that something that happens regularly, and is it something that happens over such a long period of time that it's not a sudden issue, or tell me what happens when that happens?
Well, the Earth's magnetic field, we visualize it as flipping, but what really happens is that the magnetic field has a direction, i.e. the compass is point north, but it also has an intensity, a strength. And the first, when the magnetic field is beginning to change, and this is why people think it might be happening, is the magnetic field begins to weaken. It begins essentially to shrink to almost nothing. So for a while, the Earth has no magnetic field. And then whatever is causing this to happen in the core gets realigned, and it grows back out again, increases in strength. And just like flipping a coin, there are two options. It can either grow out in strength in the same direction, or it can grow in the reverse direction. So sometimes it comes out reverse, and we call that a magnetic reversal or flipping. And the whole process takes about 20 to 40,000 years. So it's not anything that we can experience in a lifetime, or even the lifetime of a civilization. But
when we're at that point where there's for a while no... there's no
magnetic field
for the Earth. What would that mean? Like, if that suddenly happened tomorrow, like, oh, the magnetic field's gone. What would we see?
Magnetic field's very important to the Earth, especially back a long time ago when things were just getting started, because the magnetic field provides a shield, and the great aurora borealis that we see in the sky are basically cosmic particles and charged particles from the sun being caught in the magnetic field and then being dragged down to the poles in a very energetic display. And without the magnetic field, those particles would just bombard the Earth, including deleterious cosmic rays. So there would be a fair amount of damage to living things, but it's not long enough and it's not intense enough that it would cause an extinction or a wipeout life. It would probably increase mutation rates, you know, for a while, but basically, whatever is alive wouldn't really notice it for the most part, so it's something you don't want to happen for a long period of time, but for shorter periods of time, geologically speaking, just tens of thousands of years, it's something the life on Earth has learned to cope with.
When you're talking about knowing where the tectonic plates were and the shifts that have happened over the last few hundred million years, does that mean that you can also say, and 100 million years from now, here's how things will look?
Well, it's easier to understand the past because there's evidence. And much of what I do, because I'm an Earth historian, is analyzing the scientific data to try to tease out the patterns and try to understand what has happened in the past. The future is always unknown. We don't know what will happen precisely, but the analogy I like to make is if you're driving down the highway and you close your eyes, which I don't recommend doing.
Good. Thank you for clarifying that.
you can guess, you know, in a few seconds, you're just going to be a few hundred feet in the same direction you were going. And as long as the road is straight and you maintain a certain speed, you can sort of estimate pretty accurately how long it will take to get to a certain location. And we do that all the time. The trick is that if the road curves, or if there's an exit, or if there's an accident, that can change your destination or the time it takes. So the same thing with plate tectonics. We know how the plates are moving or where they're moving, and the rate they're moving, and we get that information from satellites that actually can actually measure how the surface of the Earth is moving in terms of centimeters per year very precisely. And so the first thing to do is just project those motions into the future. So if we do that, we can get a reasonably good idea of what the map of the Earth will look like in, say, 50 million years. And that will be, the oceans will be a little bit bigger that are spreading. The ones that are closing are going to be a little bit narrower. If continents are colliding, the mountains will be a little bit higher, things like that. But once you get past 50, 60, 100, just like on the highway, things can happen. And we don't know necessarily what all the different effects might be or the different consequences of things that might happen far in the future.
So you can make
guesses. Yeah. You can make educated guesses.
There's some science on how things should happen, but other things could affect the Earth that will change that, basically, right?
Yeah, right. Right now, Africa is colliding with southern Europe. That's why we have the Alps. And the Mediterranean was once part of a much larger ocean, which connected eastward into the Indian Ocean. So the Mediterranean is getting smaller and smaller and smaller through time. So eventually, about 50 million years from now, the Mediterranean will be completely gone, and there'll be a huge mountain range that stretches from Gibraltar all the way to the Mideast, where the Mediterranean was. And so that means, just like in a car crash, Africa has to slow down, it has to stop moving. If Africa stops moving, then how does that affect the continents and the plates around it? And so those are sort of the uncertainties that that propagate once you have major tectonic events and major events like collisions.
But in general, these things all happen over such a long period of time that while you can estimate and see, you know, what's happening year to year, there's never a point where we say, holy cow, this has changed. It's just so gradual, right?
Well, it's gradual, but it's not invisible. And also, the plates move very slowly, about as fast as your toenails grow. They did a study once by measuring how fast fingernails and toenails grow using a group of asylum inmates who weren't going anywhere. And it turns out toenails grow a little bit slower than fingernails, but the point is that plates don't move that slowly, continuously. They move in fits and starts. And that's why we have big earthquakes, like the earthquake in California. The stresses and the forces build up, and then it snaps, and the whole system moves a few feet or tens of meters. And when that happens, obviously, you have the effect of the earthquake, but you also have, you can see on the surface, the fault scarps, the cracks that are created, and they change in a way that people can notice and realize that it's a process that happens slowly, but it does produce results.
So I'm looking right now. So I put in my town where I live, West Dundee, Illinois, and I went to the most recent time that it could be looked at, which is just 20 million years ago. And it says there, the Neocene period, mammals and birds continue to evolve into modern forms. Early hominids emerge in Africa. And so it's got North America looking like North America, except Florida has not emerged yet, and there are no Great Lakes. And that is just amazing to think about, that these things are just weren't always there as recently as 20 million years ago. We kind of have the current form, it looks like, of our continents, but so much still hasn't happened or taken place. How do Great Lakes suddenly form in the middle of this huge continent? I know you probably haven't looked at that exactly, but that just blows me away.
It's an interesting story, one of the older geological stories. When geologists began mapping and exploring, they came across features that were out of place. So a lot of the early geologists worked in the Alps, and so they knew what glacial features looked like because there are modern glaciers in the Alps. And when they explored other parts of Europe and North America, they saw these other glacial features. One of them is a hill of rocks and mud called a moraine. And that name may be familiar to some of the listeners because there's that name is used in the geography of this area of Illinois, the Moraine Valley Community College, is something that comes to mind.
Yeah.
And a moraine is where the edge of the glacier is melting, but still moving. So the rocks that are caught up in the ice keep moving like a conveyor belt towards the melt front. And when the ice meets the melt front, it drops the rocks and eventually piles up into a big hill called a moraine. And there's other evidence. In Chicago, most of Chicago was once the bottom of Lake Michigan. So Lake Michigan was 20, 30 feet higher, put it all the way out to the western suburbs. And so if you go below the black soil, which Chicago has, there's a yellow clay layer. And that yellow clay layer is the bottom of the lake where this very fine sediment is filtered down and was deposited in very quiet waters that were generated when the ice was melting. And that melting ice basically created the Great Lakes about between 20,000 and 10,000 years ago.
That's pretty crazy. I mean, it makes sense, I guess, to hear it, but it's just, and on this map, Florida is not there yet. So is Florida just underneath water at the time, and slowly is the ocean?
Yeah, basically, if you've been to Florida, you probably notice this. There are now no mountains in Florida. Florida is very, very flat. The Everglades is a big swamp that's almost at sea level. So it doesn't take much in terms of a sea level rise to flood Florida. So 20 million years ago, sea level was about 100 feet higher, 200 feet higher than it is today. And that was enough to flood Florida. So the rocks that form the basement of Florida, the current land of Florida, have always been there. It's just the question is whether or not they're covered by the ocean.
Is that why they have such sinkhole problems in Florida? Because relatively recently, that was still all just underwater, and the water is not that low compared to the land?
Right. There's two things going on with the sinkholes. To get sinkholes, you have to have a water table, which is fairly high. And the other thing is you have to have a type of rock that can be easily dissolved by water. And one type of rock that forms nowadays near Florida in the Bahamas is called limestone, which is made up of the shells of seashells, basically of marine creatures. And that sort of material can be dissolved fairly easily by fresh water, and that creates underground caverns. And the caverns, when they reach the surface, form sinkholes.
I'm spinning this globe around. So by the way, everybody, to check this out, and I've got to wrap it up right now. So thank you so much for being with us, Christopher. This is amazing. I'm going to give everybody the website. Your work is amazing. I hope we can talk again soon.
Me too. It's been a lot of fun.
All right. Thank you so much. We've got to get to a break here, but go to dinosaurpictures.org/ancient-earth and then the number sign and then 240. dinosaurpictures.org/ancient-earth. We'll give that out again. It's amazing. Check it out. News next, 720 WGN.